Welcome to Book Bistro, where book enthusiasts come to chat about the books they love in a warm and supportive environment. Today is Monday, February 12th, 2024. This is Shannon, and tonight I am here with Melissa, Christine, and Robin, and we are talking about books by Black authors, because February is Black History Month, and I wanted to take this opportunity to pull together a collection of books written by Black authors. Some of these are going to be, you know, things that are already on your radar, things that are pretty popular. Some of them will be less so. So we are going to get started with the usual housekeeping information. Then Christine will start us off, followed by Melissa, me, and Robin will end the round.
You can find us on Facebook by searching for Book Bistro Podcast. There we have our usual Facebook page where we keep track of our Wednesday reads and also post information about the Friday episodes. We also have a Facebook listener group that you're welcome to join. And if you prefer a different type of listener group, you can contact us and ask about our WhatsApp group. Both groups are pretty small, not super high traffic, and we would love to have you. If you want to get in touch with us off of social media, you can do so by sending an email to thebookbistropodcast@gmail.com. If you're looking for our main hosting page, where you can find information on the podcatchers that make Book Bistro available to you, you can find that information in our show notes.
So my first book is Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby. I really did like this book. I found it very powerful and poignant. Our main characters are two men. Both have been criminals, spent time in and out of jail. Ike has been out of jail for 15 years, and he hasn't had as much as a speeding ticket in all that time. And he's just worked hard to provide for his family. One day he gets a knock on his door, and he sees that there are cops at the door. And when a Black man sees cops at the door, he knows he should be afraid. But what he doesn't expect to hear is that his son, Isaiah, who is a Black journalist, and his husband, I mean by that Isaiah's husband, have both been murdered. Isaiah is a journalist. His husband, Derek, is a pastry chef. They're a Black man and a white man married. This is not a popular thing in a lot of places. So he hears this and he's very upset on a lot of levels. One is he's never quite accepted his son's sexuality, and he's never understood why he married a white man. If he was going to do this marriage thing to a man. So he feels like, you know, he never came to terms with that. The last time that they talked, it was sort of an argument, and now there won't be anything. And the only thing left to him, he feels, is to try to figure out what happened to his son. And the only person that he knows to try to help him do this is Derek's father, Buddy Lee. And it takes a lot for him to go to Buddy Lee. Buddy Lee has also been in and out of trouble. He's still kind of in and out of trouble a lot. He doesn't do so well. He drinks a lot, and he has a really hard time. And he has despised his son's sexuality. And Ike goes to him and he says, we don't have to like each other. I know that this is going to be hard, but the police don't have any answers. They're not even asking any questions. When they do, nobody wants to talk. So they're pretty much regarding it as a case that's closed. And they don't really care that much. It's not a big deal to them. So we have to do what we have to do to find out. And so they start a mission to both get to the truth of what happened to their sons and also to bring down vengeance and make people pay for that. Not just the people who did it, but the people who won't help them find the people who did it. So if you're in that path, they really did wreak some havoc, and they end up having a lot of run-ins with cops, with other people. They have to deal with a gang. It's a very violent, brutal gang. And things just go very bad for them before they get any better. But the one thing that I liked about the book, the thing that I liked the best, is that through this mission, they start to talk. They don't have anything else to do. They have to be together a lot. So they start to grudgingly at first form a bond and form a friendship and figure out that they're not so different in a lot of ways, and that they both have a lot of love for their sons, and that they know their sons truly loved each other. They saw that. They didn't want to see it, but they did. And they realized that the only thing they can do is give their sons some justice, try to find some justice. And the other thing that they can do, one other thing, is to try and accept and love their sons for who they were and forgive themselves for thinking that their sons were so terrible. Ike is really much more in touch with this. He's very sorry. He says near the end of the book, he says, I realized that I want to know my son for who he, I wish I could have known that man. I wish I could have known that gay black man. And I'll never get the chance. But that's what I want now. I've come to terms with that, and I wish I could do it over. I just found a lot of their conversations very touching, very powerful, very impactful. So, there's a lot to this book, a lot of depth, and I encourage reading Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby.
Ooh, yes. I'm imagining
Love
how
this
many
book.
times I would cry if I read this.
I did cry,
I
yeah.
cried. I'm
I did too.
sure. Oh. My first book tonight is called Hold You Down by Tracy Brown, and it tells the story of Lennox and Mercy. Lennox and Mercy are sisters. And they've grown up really hard in Harlem. And the book opens with them at their mother's grave in February in New York, and they're trying to get away. But the preacher won't shut up. And boy, have I been through some things when the preacher wouldn't shut up. So Mercy and Lennox have a son each. They're single mothers. And so they raise their sons together as brothers and cousins. And then so this book follows all the things they go through. For example, Lennox is killed because she gets involved in the drug scene, making crack and selling it. And Mercy has to take care of Dion. So
Later on, Dion is jumped and Judah runs and gets a gun and shoots the guys. So he ends up in prison. And then there's a love story between Judah's girlfriend and Dion. And this almost tears them apart, basically. And at the end, it kind of leaves you hanging. I'm going to read you just a little bit of what the author wrote. She says, "This book is for the little boys and the women who love them when they've grown up without a father figure or a mentor." Now, Tracy Brown passed away in May of 2023. So the book that was in our February picks is being published by her family, and it's known as her final novel, and it's entitled Brooklyn. That is Hold You Down by Tracy Brown.
I really, really liked her White Lines books.
Yeah. I've not read those yet.
Oh, you should.
Those are so, so good. All right. So my first book is Before I Let Go. And this is Skyland, book one, by Kennedy Ryan. I really, really love Kennedy Ryan. And have ever since I read Long Shot back in, like, I don't know, 2019, maybe. But this one is a new series for her. This book came out in November of 2022. And actually, the next book in this series will be out next month. So this is the story of Yasmin and Josiah. And they've been married for a number of years. But when we meet them, they have been divorced for a couple of years. Things went terribly wrong in their lives, and their marriage just couldn't survive it. So when we first meet them, they are co-parenting their two children. They are running a successful restaurant in Atlanta, and they're doing all these things together. And they're trying really hard to ignore the feelings that maybe, just maybe, they still have for one another. Josiah knows that he will never stop loving Yasmin, but he also feels like he can't trust her because she, in to his way of thinking, kind of walked out on their marriage. Like she said, "This is too hard. I can't do this. I'm done." For her part, Yasmin feels like Josiah wasn't there for her when she needed him most, and that the only way she could survive was to leave. So now, will these two get a second chance? And if they get it, will they take it and embrace it? This is very much like a slice of life novel. You see these characters just going through their daily lives, and you see the toll that heavy, heavy grief has taken on both of them. This is an examination of love, but also of mental health, and what happens when we don't take care of our own mental health and that of our friends and family members. It talks a little bit about like toxic masculinity and the way in which that keeps kind of pushing a lot of men down instead of building them up and teaching them to be strong in healthy ways. Kennedy Ryan is such a beautiful lyrical writer. I find myself deeply, deeply drawn in by everything she does. And if you've never read her and you are a romance reader, I highly recommend you pick up something of hers. This one is Before I Let Go. It's Skyland, book one, and it's by Kennedy Ryan.
Oh, I'm so excited about the new one that's coming.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. March 5th, I believe. So I'm going to change things up a little bit and talk about a memoir. The Color of Love, a story of a mixed race Jewish girl by Mara B. Gad. And I picked up this book on Saturday night and read it in less than 24 hours. Granted, it is a pretty short book, but I really could not put it down. It was moving, shocking, horrifying. And the author reads the audiobook. And as a former musical theater actress, she has an excellent voice for narrating books. So in 1970, 3-day-old Mara was adopted by a white Jewish family in Chicago. For her parents, it was love at first sight, but they quickly realized the world wasn't ready for a family like theirs. Mara's biological mother was an unwed white Jewish girl in New York, I think. And when she discovered she was pregnant, her rabbi sent her to upstate New York to some kind of, home for unwed mothers type of thing. And she never told anyone who the father of the baby was. It became very obvious once the little girl was born why she didn't do that. This little Mara was born with brown skin. And based on that and some of her other features, like her hair, it was pretty clear her dad was black. So not only was mom unwed, but she hung out with a black guy. Anyway, Mara's parents adored her. The thing I love about this story is how loving and committed the immediate family was. Because as the child of white people, Mara got a lot of unwanted attention. And there was a lot of racism within the Gad family, from aunts, uncles, cousins, great aunts, etc., etc. There's some really horrifying stories. But Mara's Bubby, her grandmother, and her parents, and her brother and sister were always behind her 100%. And to the point where they ejected people from their lives if those people were cruel to Mara or made it clear in any way that they didn't want her. I mentioned but Mara's brother and sister. So as often seems to happen, when a couple who can't have kids adopts a kid, then they get pregnant. So Mara's brother and sister looked like her parents, and they were white. And there's another piece, a piece that really baffles me as someone who was raised Jewish, but is also kind of aware of things in the world. All of the Jewish people that Mara knew when she was a kid were adamant that a Jewish person could not be black. It just did not make sense to me that people believed this.
How is this like a thought that people have?
They were sure that if you were Jewish, you couldn't be black. And if you were black, you couldn't be Jewish. So this is a really beautiful story about family, about identity. We hear about Mara's experiences growing up. We hear about her experiences becoming a young adult, being told by her group of Jewish male friends that she should never expect to date a Jewish man seriously or marry a Jewish man, because nobody's ever going to want to bring her home to mom and dad. And this is just a really amazing book. Really, really beautiful, really unique story, really well-told story. It is The Color of Love by Mara B. Gad.
Wow.
Well, I will have to pick this up.
So my second book is The Queen of Sugar Hill.
Yay!
And
yay!
By Rashonda Tate. And it was, I loved this book.
I just have to point out that this was originally going to be mine, but I am kind. And so I gave it to you.
Wow. I thank you.
And you did it out of love, now, Shannon.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It just, you know, had to be pointed out.
The Queen of Sugar Hill by Rashonda Tate. And it is about Hattie McDaniel. And she played Mammy on the controversial movie Gone with the in the controversial movie Gone with the Wind. And when the book opens, it is the night of the Oscars in 1940, and she is going to, like, she's worked really hard. This is like the pinnacle for her. This is really gonna change her life, and she's feels like it's going to really open up things for other Black actors and actresses. She just really hopes that this will not only continue to do good things for her, but to change what happens with other Black people, African-American people who want to get into the business. So she takes her place in history as the first Black woman to win an Academy Award for her supporting role as Mammy. And it kind of gets, that's the best part. It gets worse from there, unfortunately. So, the first thing that we face is right after the Oscars, when there is a party and she goes to that party with Clark Gable and some of her other friends. Clark Gable was a very close friend of hers, and he did a whole lot as a white man could. He did try to help her out in a lot of ways, and he backed her, and he was not ashamed, and he, you know, was a good friend. They went to this party for the cast, and she couldn't go because, of course, they didn't let colored people into the party. And so, you know, she says this is fine. She tries to make it okay. It's not okay. She goes back to her home, and she has some really awesome friends. They gave her a little party, and that was wonderful. But this group of friends continues to be with her throughout her life, and they are absolutely wonderful as a support system, because her life just, she, it's like several months after the Oscars, she can't get jobs. She is thrust into this huge battle between the like the white people just see her as Mammy, and, you know, they just think, oh, Mammy, you know, and the Black people are enraged that she could play such a part and be, you know, that make them look like that and suck up to the white people. And she's not welcome in either place, in either world. And the NAACP is absolutely outraged at Hattie and all the other actors and actresses, the African-American, who play these kind of parts. And it's a real conflict, because what you work, you want to work, you want to make money, you want to act, you have to play parts, and somebody's going to play those parts. If it's not you, it's going to be somebody else. And that's what's out there. And you really believe that if you start somewhere, you'll open the way for people. Mm-hmm. And Hattie was very, very passionate about wanting to make things better, not worse, for people. This was her way that she sought to do that. And yet at every turn,
wow,
her own people disagreed and were very hateful to her. And the white people didn't understand why she just wasn't content and why it wasn't fine to take these roles and play them. And why did people think this was such a problem? And that was the acting part of her life. Other parts did not go so well either. She was married 4 times and she did not make good choices about marriages. It's like these men would sweep her off of her feet and it seemed like there was always going to be a wonderful thing. They seemed like they were going to be great. They treated her wonderfully. And then it was like once they were married, they just wanted to control her or her money or her career, or they just were abusive in some way. It was not good. It was very awful. She lost a lot of her money to at least one of them. She just lost her prestige. She miscarried. She could not, she did not, wasn't able to be a mother. She didn't really know if she wanted to be, but then when she found out she was pregnant, she really decided she was all in for that. And then it didn't happen. And, you know, she was in and out of very, very severe depressions. She always wanted to live in Sugar Hill, which was a very elite neighborhood. And she bought a house there. But it was not a neighborhood where they wanted Black people to live. So there was also a lot of fights with housing discrimination, that she was in ongoing fights for housing and for the right for Black people to live where they wanted, in the neighborhoods they wanted, and for that whole era to end where there were covenants people would sign to keep Black people or other people of color out of their neighborhoods and keep them white. So she just, her life was one of great struggle. And amidst that, though, she was a very, like, she loved entertaining. She loved having people around. She loved throwing dinner parties. She threw parties all the time. In fact, the night before she died, the very last thing that she did was to have one final party in her hospital room. She had her people around her, and by golly, she was going to make sure that she went out celebrating the best way she could. And so this was a very well-written struggle that just one person has. And we know there's so many more struggles people have had trying to make it in the acting field. It's tough. It was awful then, and she just was a really special woman. I just really liked the knowledge I gained of her, because before this book, all I knew of her was Mammy. That's all I had ever known. So I recommend this book. Also, of course, it is The Queen of Sugar Hill by Rashonda Tate.
Yes.
When I was in grad school, and this was, you know, like 2007 or so, I learned that the small town next to the city where I was in school still sort of informally had restrictive covenants, even though technically, like, they weren't legal. It was a town that was incredibly unwelcoming to Black people and seemed to take a lot of pride in that fact. Yeah. And I was really disturbed that, you know, in like 2007, wow, like, this was still a thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's crazy.
My second book is Yesterday I Cried by Iyanla Benzin. This is a really good book that I've used, and I've won a couple oral interpretation competitions reading it. It tells the story of Iyanla. At that time, her name was Rhonda Harris. And it follows her through her abandonment of her mother and her father and an uncle that abused her, basically raped her, and just all the things she goes through in her life. And each chapter starts off with, "Yesterday I cried," and it's very long. This was the first one of her life. She has others, but this one was the very first one. And I had to read it first, and then my professor had me take each "Yesterday I Cried," and we wrote it up as a manuscript. So she has 5 or 6 children. She had had a baby when she was 14, and then the baby had passed away because it was a premature baby. And now she has 5 other kids. And it talks about all the different men and all the different things and struggles she had to go through. And at the end, she's marrying her second or third husband, and it's a ceremony where it's a traditional ceremony. Then they have a ceremony where they're supposed to let go of all their flaws and all their pasts, and it's supposed to go into a suitcase that is opened up on the room floor. And of course her Rhonda persona fights her the hardest to become, you know, let go. And the premise of the book is her way of saying, yes, I am Iyanla, but I'm also Rhonda. That's "Yesterday I Cried" by Iyanla Van Zandt.
I have seen some write-ups about this online. It's often listed in, you know, like lists of like powerful writings by Black women, but mm-hmm. I have never read it. All right. So my second book is part memoir and part sort of social history in a way. This is "I Won't Shut Up: Finding Your Voice When the World Tries to Silence You" by Allie Henney. I follow Allie Henney on social media and have for the past couple of years, and have just really been impacted by the depth of her writing and just the amount of grace that she brings to the stories that she tells and the way that she sort of challenges people to think differently and to be better. This is partly her sort of growing up story. We learn about her family and, you know, the neighborhoods where she lived growing up. We also learn that she has spent the majority of her life in predominantly white spaces. And through that experience, she's able to really look at what it means to be, in her own words, a loud Black woman when the world isn't really prepared for that. And she talks a lot in this book about figuring out how to find her voice and how to claim the space in the world that she knows that she deserves, but that the world doesn't always want to give her. She is a theologian, as well as a speaker and writer. She does a lot of advocacy work on social media, but also just really shares her experiences in hopes of creating a better world. It's hard to really describe this book because it's not, like I said in the beginning, it's not just a straight up memoir. There's a lot of deep introspection here where she will explore, you know, sort of the movement of racism and how it has become systemic in this country. It is a pretty short read, but incredibly powerful. If you get it in audio, she reads it herself, which I think is just a really, really special experience. Like I said, she is a speaker, and you can tell just by the way that she reads that she has a lot of control over, you know, her voice and her tone, and she just really brings it to life in a way that I don't think anyone else could have. It doesn't always work well for people to narrate their own work, but in this case, it absolutely does. This is I Won't Shut Up, Finding Your Voice When the World Tries to Silence You by Allie Henney.
Ooh.
All right. So next up, I am going to talk about The Heaven and Earth Grocery Store by James McBride. And this book has been on a lot of bestseller lists for, well, since it came out. So for the last several months. I often steer clear of bestsellers, or at least I steer clear of them until they stop being high on the bestseller list. I don't know why. It's just a weird quirk I have. But I really wanted to read this book, and after having read it, I see why it just continues to be in the top five of so many lists. This is a funny book. It's quirky. It's really well written. The audiobook is really well narrated. The story is intriguing. I just... Wow, yeah, this is a really amazing book. This is a book about small town secrets and the people who keep them. In 1972, when workers in Pottstown, Pennsylvania were digging the foundations for a new development, the last thing they expected to find was a skeleton at the bottom of a well. Who was this skeleton? And how did it get there? These are two of the long-held secrets kept by the residents of Chicken Hill, the dilapidated neighborhood where immigrant Jews and African Americans lived side by side and shared ambitions and sorrows. So then we go back to the 1930s, where Moshe and Shona Ludlow were living together as husband and wife. Moshe ran a theater that he had integrated so he would allow Black people and white people to attend. Shocker, I know. And Shona ran the Heaven and Earth Grocery Store, which she had inherited from her father. There are a lot of other characters in this book, but the one you might want to know about is Dodo. No, I don't know why his name is Dodo, but he is a 12-year-old Black boy who is deaf. And the state wants to institutionalize him. Now, his aunt and uncle, who are taking care of him since his mom died, don't really understand what the state wants to do with him. But they just have an innate sense that it's bad. I will tell you that the state wants to send him to an institution. They say they want to send him to a special school, but that's crap. It's just not true. So his uncle Nate and Shona, the proprietor of the Heaven and Earth grocery store, conspire to protect Dodo. How this plays out and how it affects the various residents of Chicken Hill is the bulk of this book. I love this book. These characters are amazing. They are deeply human, deeply flawed, full of love for each other, if not for themselves. And there's a lot of really great historical detail here, a lot of really great setting. There's a lot of illustration of how the white people who run the city and have control of the bulk of the money that moves through the town are at best ignorant and at worst just really, really nasty and inhumane. And we see the ways that the Jewish people and the African American people work together and sometimes work at cross purposes to each other, but are always working to defend themselves against the white leaders of the town. So this was the Heaven and Earth Grocery Store by James McBride.
This is on my list of things to read, along with Deacon King Kong that McBride also wrote.
My final book is House of Eve by Sadika Johnson. Again, of course, I really liked this book, so be warned, you should read it. It follows two women, and of course, as this usually happens, their lives collide in a very interesting way. The first of these that we follow is Ruby. She's 15 years old, and she is on track to becoming the first in her family to go to college. And this is no small accomplishment, because she's had some very difficult situations to grow up in. Her mother was 15 when she became pregnant with Ruby, and she was not capable of earning enough money to take care of her properly. So Ruby was brought up by her grandmother, and she remained with her grandmother until her grandmother developed glaucoma and lost most of her vision. So at that point, Ruby went to live with Inez, her mother. Her mother, though, was a whole lot more interested in keeping a man than raising her daughter. So she was only with her a short time. Something bad happened, and she blamed Ruby, and she kicked her out of the house. So at that point, she goes and stays with her aunt. Now, all of these women in her life have little education, and they make their very meager livings by cleaning other people's homes. And Ruby just wants better for herself. Ever since her grandmother developed glaucoma, she has wanted to study to become an optometrist. And she has been accepted into a program called We Rise. And this program grants full scholarships for all 4 years of college to the brightest and most deserving students. And this is the only way that she can make this happen for her. So this is a big deal to her. But then she meets Shimmy. Jimmy is the landlord's son. He's white, he's Jewish, and this is the 1950s. but he treats her so wonderfully. He's sweet, he's kind, he just is wonderful to her, and she falls in love with him, he falls in love with her, and this is difficult. She becomes pregnant, and she weighs her options, which at that time, you know, abortion is illegal, so she's not really sure what she should do now. What she faces some tough decisions. And at that point, we have Eleanor Quarles. And Eleanor is from a small town in Ohio. Again, like Ruby, she was not from a well-to-do family. Her family, her parents worked really hard. They saved and they struggled because they wanted her to go to college. So she enters college in Washington, D.C. at Howard University, which is an all-black college. She wants to be part of a sorority, and she tries to do this, but she's passed over. And it's obvious that she's passed over because her parents and family are not known. They're not rich. They're not acceptable in the ways that you need to be a part of that sorority. So that's difficult for her. She's working in the library because she wants to be an archivist when she graduates. And as she's working in the library, she notices that every time there's the same guy there. And one day he approaches her, and oh, she thinks he's handsome. He approaches her on the pretext of sharpening a pencil, but he kind of wants to get to know her. She doesn't want to get involved with anybody because she knows that her parents worked really hard to send her to college, and she thinks that the least she can do is really make good use of their hard work, and she wants to do college. She's very smart. She has a lot of potential. But she goes to a dance and she sees him and she starts dating him. And they get very serious very fast. And he decides to take her to meet his parents one evening, and she's very surprised at the size of this mansion that his family lives in. It's a gathering of his friends and some other people. They're all very wealthy, and they're all part of the black upper society. She doesn't fit in. His parents aren't welcoming of her. But she keeps on seeing him anyway. And he does have a name. His name is William, and I didn't say that before. William Pride, and he's a medical student. Things get complicated because she realizes, not too long into their seeing each other, that she is pregnant. And when she tells him he wants to marry her, his mother is not happy about this at all, but because Eleanor's pregnant, she wants to go through with a really quick wedding, and they do this, and his parents buy them a house to live in. She miscarries the first child. She miscarries the second child. She is very unhappy because she's pretty sure that she needs a child to make it okay for her to be in this family and to be accepted by William's parents. And even William now, because they just are, their relationship is strained. She also has a big secret that she has not told William, and she's not sure what would happen if she does tell him.
The story is very well written, and it takes a very good look at race and class prejudices of all different kinds, not just color, but class and education and those sorts of things. I very much recommend this book. It is The House of Eve by Sadika Johnson.
My final book is called Zami, A New Spelling of My Name by Audre Lorde, or as voiceover. Yes. This is a very good book. It's kind of one of her biographical writings on her life. When I first read this book, I was in an English class, and I was like, and my professor was a white woman, and she assigned this book, and I'm thinking, what? That's a black writer. Anyway, I love this book because it traces Audre's life from being a kid in Harlem. And I remember one part of the book where a friend of hers kills herself by taking rat poison. And we never find out why or why she does this. Now, Audre has had a very interesting life. It is very descriptive in her sexual life with other women. So if that's a problem, you might have to either skip those part or not read this book. It covers her life in the 50s, 60s, and how she meets the various women she loves. And she has an illegal abortion, which is also described, as well as how she cheated making some radioactive bricks or something. I can't quite remember. But she goes through a lot. And at the end, her mother says, "How's your roommate?" Because at one time, in the black culture, it's kind of, you're supposed to kind of keep it on a down low, basically. You say, your roommate or your her friend, or then some other negative connotations. I think the surprising thing for me was after this book to find out that she got married and had two or three children. And when she died, she was living with a woman. So in my African lit class, they said she was she seemed to be bisexual, which I had no trouble with because I'm the same way. But it is a very good read and a very good journey of her life. That is Zami, A New Spelling of My Name by Audre Lorde.
My therapist took college classes, and Audre Lorde was her professor in the early 80s.
All right. So my last book tonight is a contemporary young adult thriller and was also one of my most anticipated January releases. This is Wander in the Dark by Jumada Emile. And you've heard me say it before, Emile wrote The Black Queen toward the beginning of 2023, and that was how I discovered his writing. And since then, I've just been a huge fan of everything he's done, both like this book that came out after The Black Queen and his backlist. So Wander in the Dark follows two brothers, Amir and Marcel. Amir is the older, and his father left his mom for Marcel's mom. And this obviously caused a lot of strife. Amir has grown up thinking that somehow he isn't good enough, that like his father wanted a better family, a better son, and somehow got that with Marcel and his mom. So he has, you know, a ton of like self-esteem problems because of this. He has a very, very rocky relationship with his father and his stepmom and Marcel. But Marcel really wants to be close with Amir. He does not understand, or at least he says he doesn't understand what sort of pushes them apart. So when the book opens, it is Marcel's birthday, and Amir is reluctantly showing up at his birthday party. Now, he's not doing this because he wants to, you know, hang out with his half-brother on his birthday. He's doing it because Chloe, who is this very popular girl at their school, has asked him to come there. And he doesn't really understand why. But he doesn't really care why either, because, you know, he's had a crush on Chloe for a long time. And he wonders if like this is finally going to be his time to get with her. So he and Chloe meet up at this party. They talk. She asks Amir to walk her home, which he does. And they then spend some time together alone in Chloe's house. Amir falls asleep on the couch, and when he wakes up, Chloe's dead. Now, everyone decides that Amir must have killed her, and he is arrested and is charged with this. Marcel doesn't believe that Amir killed Chloe, and he is determined to clear his name, even though Amir, you know, hasn't always treated him well. They don't have a good relationship. But he feels like this is what he has to do for his brother. And so the two of them very reluctantly join forces, or at least reluctantly on Amir's part, join forces to find out the truth about what happened to Chloe. And the truth is very, very dark, and something that I was really surprised by. And I can't tell you why without going into spoiler territory where we don't want to go. But this is a very moving book, but also very dark and disturbing in the way that a lot of thrillers can be. Not disturbing in like an over the top kind of like slasher way, but disturbing because these are the kinds of things that still happen in real life for Black people. So this is Wander in the Dark by Jumada Emil. And I highly, highly recommend this along with The Black Queen.
The last book I will talk about is Pretty by Keith F. Miller Jr. I love this book. I can't wait for the sequel that I don't think we have a title for, but is supposed to come out sometime this year.
Ooh.
And this book follows two boys who get caught in the crossfire of a sinister plot that not only threatens everything they love, but may cost them their own chance at love. This was a really interesting book for me to read because it takes place in a very gritty urban savannah setting. And there are gangs, and there's kind of gang adjacent activity, and it's unlike anything I have known in my life. And yet I also know it is real life for a lot of people. So let's find out what this book is and who these people are. On the verge of summer before his senior year, Jay is a soft soul in a world of concrete. I'll pause here to say Jay is very sweet, very smart, very bookish. He loves to write. It's just a really fun person, somebody I would enjoy knowing. Now, his older brother is everything people expect a man to be. Tough, athletic, in charge. Jay simply blends into the background to everyone. Well, not quite everyone. He does not blend into the background for Leroy. Jay is confused because Leroy could have anyone he wants. So how on earth could he possibly be interested in Jay? But Jay isn't about to ignore this surprising but welcome attention. The world around Jay begins to get pretty intense. And there are whispered rumors over the murder of a young Black journalist. And there are territory tensions and arguments that are hanging like a dark cloud over his neighborhood. And when Jay and Leroy find themselves caught in the crossfire, and spoiler, literally, Leroy isn't willing to be the reason Jay's life is at risk. Ultimately, though, Leroy doesn't have a choice about this. They're both dragged into the world of the Black Diamonds. And that's a group whose work is to protect the Black neighborhoods of Savannah. Leroy, things are pretty intense for him. His older brother is trying to take up the mantle of their father's Black Diamonds leadership. And meanwhile, Jay is trying to get on with his life and enjoy his summer. We see some pretty interesting juxtapositions between Jay hanging out at the community pool and Leroy and his brother dodging threats from known and unknown sources. And then, of course, there's some romance thrown in alongside it. This is a really intense book, a really scary book, also a really heartwarming book. There are some amazing adults in this book who they don't always get it right, but they are always, always, always there for the young people. So if you want a really immersive read, pick up Pretty by Keith F. Miller Jr.
I have been on hold for this at my public library for quite a while. I am hoping that it comes in very soon. All right, so this brings us to the end of our Books by Black Authors episode. Thank you so much to Christine, Melissa, and Robin for joining me tonight. And as always, when Christine presents here, we thank her for double duty as both participant and editor. And of course, we thank each and every one of you so much for joining us each week as we talk about great books. If you would like to let us know your thoughts, you can do that by leaving us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or any other platform you use to access the show. And not only does it allow us to see your feedback, but it also helps other book lovers to find us, which is a great thing. So I will be back next Tuesday morning with more bookish fabulousness. And some number of us will be back on Friday with more discussion of great books. Take care, everybody.